This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss coverage of the Democratic-led House Committee on the January 6th attacks and the current state of white supremacist groups. Joining us is Will Carlis. Will covers extremism for USA Today. One of his latest articles is about a 40-year-old Army veteran who joined the Wisconsin Proud Boys looking for brotherhood. He found racism, bullying, and anti-Semitism. Hi, Will. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, as always, for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you, Will. I want to play a clip from the January 6th hearings that just took place this week. And in this clip, you're going to hear from Metropolitan Police Officer Michael Fanone, Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges, Capitol Police Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell, Capitol Police Private First Class Harry Dunn, and Representative Benny Thompson, the committee's chairman. Now, a number of media outlets played the F word and the N word, but we are going to bleep them out. This is such an important clip, and we just want to thank CNBC. Here is the clip.
So many of the people I put my life at risk to defend are downplaying or outright denying what happened.
Push them back!
I feel like I went to hell and back to protect them and the people in this room. But too many are now telling me that hell doesn't exist or that hell actually wasn't that bad.
This is now effectively a riot.
The indifference shown to my colleagues is disgraceful.
The mob of terrorists were coordinating their efforts now, shouting, heave, ho, as they synchronized, pushing their weight forward, crushing me further against the metal door frame. Directly in front of me, a man seized the opportunity of my vulnerability, grabbed the front of my gas mask, and used it to beat my head against the door. Never uttered any words I recognized, but opted instead for guttural screams. I remember him foaming at the mouth.
At some point during the fighting, I was dragged from the line of officers and into the crowd. I heard someone scream, "I got one!" Heard chanting from some in the crowd, "Get his gun and kill him with his own gun." They tortured me. They beat me. I was struck with a taser device at the base of my skull numerous times. And they continued to do so until I yelled out that I have kids. A few did step in and intervene on my behalf. Other officers were then able to rescue me and pull me back inside. But at that point, I was unconscious.
We need a medic!
Mike, stay in there, buddy. Mike, it's Jimmy. I'm here. Mike.
For the first time, I was more afraid to work at the Capitol than my entire deployment to Iraq.
They've got the gallows set upside this Capitol building. It's time to start using them.
I too was being crushed by the rioters. I could feel myself losing oxygen and recall thinking to myself, this is how I'm going to die.
One woman in a pink MAGA shirt yelled, "You hear that, guys? This voted for Joe Biden." Then the crowd, perhaps around 20 people, joined in screaming, "Boo!" No one had ever, ever called me a while wearing the uniform of a Capitol Police officer.
What would you task this committee in its body of work? What would you like to see us do?
If a hitman is hired and he kills somebody, the hitman goes to jail. But not only does the hitman go to jail, but the person who hired them does. There was an attack carried out on January 6th, and a hitman sent them. I want you to get to the bottom of that.
And that is a clip of the officers who testified at the Democratic-led House Committee about the January 6th attacks. Thanks to CNBC for that clip. We're joined by Will Carlos, who covers extremism for USA Today. Will, what really struck you about the hearing?
I mean, that's a tough thing to answer, because every time I was there on January 6th, as of course were a lot of my colleagues. And there's a little bit of, you know, I don't want to go too far and say PTSD, but every time watching this, replaying it, watching those scenes, hearing that testimony, you get a different sort of angle on this awful occurrence, on this awful day. And it kind of makes it new every time. I never got in the thick of it. I didn't go inside the building. I was kind of watching everything from afar. But when you see this testimony and you see, you know, the new footage that comes out, or the new way that these videos are put together and presented, it just kind of like takes you back to that day, and it gives you a whole new fresh look at it from a different angle. But ultimately, it's the same minutes, it's the same hours playing out every time. So it's a very weird and kind of hard thing to witness, even just as somebody who wasn't, you know, necessarily the subject or the victim of these insurrectionists.
I want to spend a little bit of time talking about Harry Dunn. We bleeped out what he said, but he said that a woman in a pink MAGA shirt said, "You hear that, guys? This N-word voted for Joe Biden." He said the crowd of 20 yelled back, "Boo effing N-word." And I'm sorry, because this is just, I'm sure that it's just horrendous to hear, but we have to be honest about who these people are. And a lot of people say that the media have not really been honest about who these people are. We hear extremist, we hear far right, but what about the racist elements of this? Daniel Hodges also says that the rioters tried to recruit him because he was white. He said, people said, "Aren't you my brother?"
Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw my hat into the ring that's the wrong analogy. I'm going to kind of fess up myself here and say I'm one of those people that hasn't necessarily, you know, labeled the crowd as explicitly white supremacists. And I'm going to stand by that to a certain extent, because I do think, I mean, there were thousands of people there that day. And what I will say is that the more extreme element certainly had a lot of racial hatred, and that there were a lot of white supremacists that day. And funnily enough, when I saw that testimony, I was out in Kentucky over the weekend on a different assignment this last weekend. And I met up with a photojournalist, a freelance photojournalist, who's a journalist of color. And we spent the evening kind of having some beers and talking about January 6th. And I was with him and a videographer with my organization, with Gannett, who's also white, a female videographer. And the difference between what myself and the videographer, our experience on that day compared to the non-white journalist, he told me he was called the N-word several times throughout the day. I mean, people were screaming it at him, shouting it at him. And people didn't necessarily know this guy was a journalist. I mean, they were just reacting to the color of his skin. So I think that this is a very visceral example of how, unless you are a person of color, you can be the best journalist in the world. You know, you can be the best, most insightful, most open-minded, most observant reporter in the world. You're never going to have the experience that a person of color had on that day or in those situations. And so I think that testimony was extremely important. And I think the more testimony that we hear from people of color who were there on that day, whether it's journalists, whether it's, you know, whether it even, I mean, even perhaps members of the MAGA crowd who were less militant, who were there, because I'm sure they were turned on too, you know. So yeah, I think that's insight into the true nature of who these people were and what they really wanted, that even the people tasked with understanding this stuff and knowing about it, being there on the day, you know, then they're not gonna fully understand it if they're white people. And that's, you know, that's something I will fess up to myself.
Well, I read an article about the reporters like yourself who were at the January 6th riot. And I'm so sorry, I forgot this reporter's name. It was an article I was reading late at night and I forgot to bookmark it. But he said the same thing that you did. He said, I now regret not writing more about race and racism when I was covering all of this during the beginning of the Tea Party. And he said, I feel like too many journalists were afraid to go there. So can you elaborate on this a bit, Will? And I just want to also point to a study that NPR reported on July 11th. A recent study published in the American Political Science Review found that animus towards Democratic-linked minority groups in 2011, like African Americans and Muslims, is a strong predictor of Trump support in later years. According to Liliana Mason, one of the authors, she said, it's not necessarily that it's the Republican Party that's creating animus towards people. It's there's a faction of Americans who really dislike marginalized groups, and they're attracted to one party or the other based on the decisions of this party. She says it's definitely a minority, but we need to talk about it.
Well, absolutely. And I think to be fair, I mean, that's kind of been my job for the last 5 years, has been to examine extremism and to bring to the foreground, to the extent that I can, you know, the racial disparity and the racism that exists in this country. You know, I was hired as an extremism reporter in 2017 at the Center for Investigative Reporting. And so pretty much every story that I've done has been attempting to examine this issue and attempting to shed some light on it, and to, you know, whether it's sort of understanding specific extremist groups and getting embedded with neo-Nazi groups and trying to, you know, trying to kind of explain and out what they're doing, or it's looking at more systemic racism in things like police departments, which is work that I've done in the past. Like, I think that there's a growing core of reporters that are doing that. But I certainly think that it's true that there hasn't been enough focus on racial animus. And I think part of that is because people perhaps don't, the majority of people perhaps don't fully understand like racial animosity and racism in this country. And I think that that's kind of a product of like racism has very much changed in America. I mean, obviously the central tenet is still the same, but it's like, whereas sort of 20 years ago, these extremist groups would express themselves in terms of, you know, white people are superior to non-white people, you know, non-white people are inferior. Like, you don't hear that as much anymore from these groups. What you hear is more along the lines of this idea of, we have to protect white culture, we have to protect European culture, this idea that, you know, that the white European culture that America was allegedly founded on is, you know, is kind of being watered down and that sort of thing. And that's just hatred in another guise. You know, it's racism in another guise, but it's not often enough, you know, truly represented in the media as that racism. And you see that when you see the New York Times sit down with, you know, the Nazi next door and do, you know, and do a sort of a not glowing profile, but a sort of a cheeky profile of them. You see it when you have mainstream news organizations interviewing, you know, hateful, awful people like Richard Spencer, and pretending that he's a legitimate talking head, you know? So I think it's a double, I don't think it's a conscious, I don't think it's a conscious effort by the media to not focus enough on race. I think it's a lack of understanding and a lack of prioritization of coverage of racism and race in this country. And I do think that that's started to change a little in the last year or so, thankfully. Hmm.
Today, we're speaking with Will Carlos, who covers extremism for USA Today. You write extensively about this and about these groups, Will. And I'd love for you to tell us about one of your latest pieces. They joined the Wisconsin Proud Boys looking for brotherhood. They found racism, bullying, and anti-Semitism. Can you just tell us a little bit about Daniel Berry, the 40-year-old Army vet who wanted a brotherhood of like-minded men watching one another's backs, holding up one another, united in a common goal? What happened when he looked into joining the Wisconsin Proud Boys?
Well, yeah, interestingly enough, this is kind of a microcosm of what I was just talking about, because here's a guy who thinks that he's joining. He's a military vet, an army vet. He's been out for a few years, and he's trying to find a group of like-minded conservative men. He lives in rural part of the country. He would describe himself as a conservative, and he wants a bunch of guys who think like him and talk like him to hang out with. And so he gravitates towards the Proud Boys. He actually heard about the Proud Boys from a colleague or from a friend at the VFW. And so he joins up with the Proud Boys, thinking that they're all of these things. And he starts to make his way through the recruitment process and starts to meet some of these people. And he notices very quickly that unless you are espousing racism, unless you're espousing hatred, unless you're espousing white supremacy, both on their online forums and in person, you're not going to advance in up the ladder of the Wisconsin Proud Boys. And he freely admits that he kind of went along with it for a while because he thought that he was sort of running a gauntlet that would eventually disappear. But the more people he met, the more of the leaders that he met, he became convinced that it was just a hateful, white supremacist, anti-Semitic group of people. And he eventually quit and left. I've been contacted since then by other former Proud Boys from other chapters. This does seem to be a trend. I don't want to say that every single chapter of the Proud Boys is an out and out white supremacist, racist group, but certainly it seems to have become, the way I've put it is, the Proud Boys seem to have become the go-to place for America's racists and haters. That's where you go. If you're a young, angry white man who is racist, you go to the Proud Boys.
This is disturbing information, just to let listeners know, especially if you have kids in the room. But you write that in one chat room, there was so much shocking content. This is according to the men you spoke with. Participants posted photos and videos of people being killed and seriously injured. One of the men described the content, quote, videos of Muslims being set on fire or blown up, check. Memes intended to laugh at Holocaust-era Jews, check. Pictures of women being raped, check. Memes poking fun at raped women, check. I could go on, but you get the point, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, it's, they're not a nice group of people. I mean, they will say, this is all fun and games. This is all, this is all joking around. Their argument, the leader's argument for having that sort of content is essentially, we're trying to weed out people who can't handle stuff, who can't hack, who can't deal with seeing horrendous stuff. And it's their form of hazing. But according to the guys I talked to, it's at least in this one chapter, it was more than that. These guys were enjoying it. They were excited by it. And that's one of the reasons that really turned off Dan Berry and some of the other guys that I talked to from going any further in the organization. I mean, I a lot of people kind of came to me after that story published and said, well, what did these guys think that they were getting into? Everybody knows the Proud Boys are a bunch of jerks and then, they're not nice people, but that's not true. There's an awful lot of people in this country who are conservative particularly men, who look at the Proud Boys and still to this day think that they're patriots. They think that they're noble, good people fighting the good fight for conservative causes. And what I found so compelling about reporting and writing that story was that, look, this isn't some, you know, this isn't some left-wing professor from Berkeley telling you that the Proud Boys are bad. It's not some lefty journalist, you know, telling you that you shouldn't join this group. These are people who believe in a lot of the things that the Proud Boys believe in, who are conservatives to the core, who themselves are saying, oh no, these guys are too rotten and too wrong even for me. you know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. So Will, we have about 2 minutes left. How big are these groups? Is there any way to know? And how concerned should we be about further violence?
I mean, if you're talking specifically about the Proud Boys, it's very hard to put a number on them. They have chapters, at least one chapter in every state. I would say they're at least in the tens, if not hundreds of thousands. But I don't think the Proud Boys, they represent a fraction of the problem. I mean, when you talk about the various different groups, if you were to lump them all together, the various different groups that have a sort of a racist agenda or a race-driven philosophy, you know, there's a lot. I mean, there's millions of people in this country who believe in some form of racial hatred. They might not think that they do, but they do. And I don't think that is going anywhere. And we haven't seen much activity from these groups since January 6th, because a lot of them are kind of in hiding or just sort of simmering under the surface, but they're out there and they haven't changed their views and they're not going anywhere, and they'll be around for a long time to come.
What about the violence in our last minute?
I mean, a lot of these groups are scared. You know, January 6th, the fact that the feds have really taken this serious. Don't forget, we're coming out of 4 years in which the federal government, led by Donald Trump, essentially denied the existence of extremist right-wing white supremacist groups and denied that it was a problem, despite all the statistics showing that domestic terrorists and right-wingers were killing, you know, extreme right-wingers were killing people all the time. Now, Joe Biden has very clearly shown that that's not going to be the way he does things, and that he's going to make this a priority of law enforcement. There's going to be violence, but I think these guys are being more careful. They're scared, and I don't think it's going to be as free-reined as it was for the previous 4 years.
Will Carlos covers extremism for USA Today. You can find his latest pieces at yourcallradio.org. Will, thank you for your important reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Joanne Marr for engineering the show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.